Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to What Went Wrong. Except this isn't going to be your standard episode. This is the first episode of a new bonus series called Out of Frame, where we'll be focusing on the obscure and sometimes dark corners of Hollywood and also taking a little more time to discuss the off-camera lives of some of your favorite on-screen stars. Today, we're investigating the mysterious death of Hollywood icon Natalie Wood and how it intersects in some very strange ways with her final film, Brainstorm. I'm here, as always, with my lovely co-host Chris Winterbauer, but because this is essentially a true crime episode, and we are not true crime experts, we've enlisted the help of an actual expert. We have Daisy Egan here with us today of Strange and Unexplained. Their show is in the fifth season. It covers true crime and paranormal activity. It's excellent. If you have not listened, you absolutely have to. The research is just top-notch. I really love the writing. It's so fantastic. Daisy's also an actor, so kind of preternaturally equipped to handle this episode. Daisy, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm so excited. I really love your show. It's so fascinating. And as somebody who's made a couple of pretty small movies, it's just fascinating to see sort of the insides of it. And it's true. They are so hard to get made. And anything can go wrong at any time. It's a great, great show. I really like it.
Well, thank you.
Good
we
job,
love your
you.
Show. Good job,
thanks.
You.
Thanks.
You must go listen to Strange and Unexplained if you all haven't. It's really good. Although, honestly, some of your episodes have freaked me out quite a bit.
Oh, good.
And you have another connection to today's episode, which I believe you've worked with Christopher Walken before.
I sure did.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. I can't wait. So before we jump in, as I said, we're going to be talking about Natalie Wood, her death, and her last film. So, Chris and Daisy, A, what do you all know about Natalie Wood going into this? And also, did you get a chance to watch Brainstorm, her final film?
Daisy, please.
Sure. I did watch it. I watched it on Sunday. I had no idea what to expect. Zero. What I knew of Natalie Wood was obviously her big, you know, Miracle on 34th Street and West Side Story. Thank you. And I actually worked with Marnie Nixon, who did the singing at least at Breakfast at Tiffany's. And I guess she did West Side Story as well.
She did West Side Story. She's come up before in our Sound of Music episode. That's amazing.
Yeah, she was an odd duck too. Lovely, lovely woman, but weird as a $3 bill. Yeah, so that she's incredibly beautiful. I mean, and her performance as a child, because I was a child actor, that is hard. That is hard to get a performance like that. And it was so different from the other kids of that time. You think of like Leave It to Beaver and sort of, I don't know, golly gee kind of acting. And then that wasn't her. She was very natural and immensely watchable and just incredibly beautiful.
She was all of those things, Chris.
Yeah, I knew her early work better. Miracle on 34th Street, The Searchers, through West Side Story, less Rebel Without a Cause, less what she did in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I don't know that period of her work quite as well. And I know she took a bit of a break from acting in the 70s. And, you know, she dedicated herself to motherhood. And so then watching Brainstorm was interesting because I was actually pretty unfamiliar with Natalie Wood at that age.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too.
And so she's very beautiful, as you mentioned. She's a very captivating, natural performer.
Yeah.
And even the 80s can feel a little stiff in terms of performance sometimes, but she is grounded. And Walken is too, I think, to his credit. I mean, like Cliff Robertson stands out a little more as a little more stodgy or stylized. Couple of things. She, Olivia Colman reminds me of her.
Yes.
I don't know, like more Natalie Wood, at the time of Brainstorm than earlier in her career. And in terms of the movie Brainstorm, the movie, I think, is structurally a bit of a mess, and it doesn't entirely make sense. But it's so interesting how, even though I think it's relatively obscure, you can see how it influenced so many movies that came after it. And television shows. Severance is one that comes to mind, obviously. But then Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, The Matrix.
Even visually with the like helmets they have on in Brainstorm in terms of Eternal Sunshine.
As they try to sell the Apple Vision Pro in 1993, but I did. The movie, I think it struggles. It's trying to figure out, is it a movie about a scientific breakthrough? Is it a Cold War thriller? Is it a love story? And the element that works the best is Natalie Wood and Christopher Walken experiencing each other's memories.
Yes.
And there's a kind of a little romantic interlude that's actually very moving.
I agree.
And I think that one of the reasons it works so well is Douglas Trumbull, the director, who I know we're not going to talk about very much, so I'll just briefly...
I want
to
know.
We actually will talk about him a bit, so you can hold on to that.
Well, he's like a special effects master. Yes. That was his background. And he did, if you guys are unfamiliar, Star Trek the Motion Picture. He worked on 2001 Space Odyssey. He does something interesting in this movie with the way that he films the memories.
Yes, he does. And Lizzie, we're going to talk about that as well.
And you'll explain it.
Well, I'm actually going to make you explain parts of it. Okay. So just get yourself ready.
If you guys watch this movie, it looks very beautiful. It's a striking departure from the standard scenes. And I actually think it's very effective. And again, Natalie Wood and Christopher Walken fill those frames really beautifully. And it actually does feel like you're stepping into memories. Yeah. And it's very, very moving.
I agree. I agree that this movie is a mess. I really liked it. If you have not seen this,
I did too. Yeah, it's worth watching.
Very much worth watching. 100%. It felt like this had influenced a lot. Just so you all know, this is the logline on IMDb. Researchers develop a system where they can jump into people's minds. But when people involved bring their personal problems into the equation, it becomes dangerous, perhaps deadly. That's not a great logline for this, to be honest. If I'm going to sell you on it, I would say, basically, yeah, they developed the Apple Vision Pro, you know, long before it exists. But what they do is they figure out a way to record someone's POV, including their senses. So sight, smell, sound, touch, everything. And then the person who is watching it is also experiencing all of those senses. And, you know, they go for it in this. Like, one of the first things that happens is that someone essentially records POV porn while using it. And
my favorite thing is that he basically comes himself silly.
Yes. The guy who's
comes
watching
himself
it,
into like a midlife crisis.
He does. He can't stop. And he's like having flashbacks to it when he's in the middle of conversations, which is so creepy and weird. And then, he's just like, I'm going to go golf for the rest of my life.
He's like, I came enough. Now it's time to go.
Which is amazing. But the big sort of turning point in this movie is that Louise Fletcher, who of course played Nurse Ratched, she's an Academy Award winner. I think she's phenomenal in this movie.
Must taste like an ashtray. But she's phenomenal.
She is an absolute chimney, just constantly smoking cigarettes. But she has a heart attack. And she recognizes that it's happening and recognizes that she may not have time to get help. And so she hooks herself up to the machine and she records her own death. And that is really the point of this movie, is that this tape exists of her death. Should they watch it? Can they watch it? Will they let Christopher Walken watch it? What are they using this technology for? Of course, the feds want in. They want to MK Ultra people with their memory machines.
And this should happen 30 minutes into the movie. And this happens almost an hour into the 90-minute movie. So to show the structural problems.
I said to my husband at one point, I was like, wow, the pacing in this movie is wild.
And yet, whatever, you know, I enjoyed it.
I did. At the end of it, I was like, wow, I liked that. I'm surprised.
It's very inventive.
I think she's wonderful in it. She's beautiful. I grew up loving Natalie Wood. And, you know, I thought of her as like one of the most beautiful women in the world. I watched West Side Story all the time when I was little. I love Gypsy. That's probably my favorite Natalie Wood performance, actually. And if you haven't seen Gypsy, it's really long, but it's worth it. Absolutely fantastic. So let's dive in. We're going to talk about Natalie Wood's death, all the confusion, rumors, why mystery continues to surround it to this day. And we're going to talk about Brainstorm, which really should have been kind of a big deal as her final film, but got buried after she died. Did Natalie Wood's death sink the film, or did the film have something to do with her death? We are going to find out today. And so strange that this movie has to do with someone recording their own death.
Yeah.
All right. So it was released September 30th, 1983. The director, as Chris said, was Douglas Trumbull. We're not really going to get into the screenplay too much. The cast, it stars notably Christopher Walken, Natalie Wood, Louise Fletcher, Cliff Robertson, and many more. If you don't know who Natalie Wood was, little brief background. She was born in 1938 as Natalia Zakarenko in San Francisco, California. And although her birth certificate listed her as Natalia, she was called Natasha as sort of a nickname. Her parents, Nick and Maria, were Russian immigrants, and they were really counting on their daughters, Natalia and Lana, to sort of help them achieve the American dream. Now, this is going to come into context in just a moment, but Maria had another daughter, Olga, from a previous marriage, making Natalia her second-born child. But she did not stay Zakharenko for long. Her father changed their family name to Gurdin in 1939 in an attempt to improve job prospects by moving them away from the end of the alphabet.
Gurdin.
Listen, if it doesn't make any sense to you, it is worth noting that Nick was a raging alcoholic. So I don't know if there's a ton of sense to that. However, her mother was an extremely intense stage mom. Later on, when Natalie was achieving success, Maria famously said, quote, God created her, but I invented her.
Oh, so it's fitting that she was in Gypsy.
Very, very fitting. Now, Maria was also extremely superstitious. As we said, she was born in Russia, but she was raised in China after escaping the Bolshevik Revolution at 5 years old. And while in China, at a pretty young age, she visited a fortune teller. The fortune teller told her that her second child would become a great beauty famous worldwide. But most importantly, this woman told her to beware of dark water because someone was going to drown. And this is not something that's made up after the fact. Both girls, Natalie and her sister Lana, avoided water pretty much their whole lives because their mother told them this story constantly. Oh, wow. Maria did not swim. She avoided water as well. And understandably, Natalie developed a very deep fear of water that was due to her mother repeating this story. Natalie's home life was extremely turbulent, as you might be able to guess. According to Suzanne Finstead, author of Natasha, the biography of Natalie Wood, Natalie was, quote, groomed by her mom to succeed at all costs, to be a pleaser, to do whatever directors and producers, even co-stars, wanted her to do.
Ooh.
So by 1943, Maria had successfully pushed Natalie, at this point still Natasha, into the spotlight, and she made her acting debut at 4 years old in an uncredited role in Happy Land. And an RKO executive named William Gertz gave her a new stage name, Natalie Wood, at this point. By 1946, she was stealing scenes from Orson Welles in Tomorrow is Forever, and she'd firmly established herself as a very high-earning child star, about $1,000 a week, which would be around $15,000 a week today.
Wow.
1 year later, at 8 years old, she becomes a household name thanks to Miracle on 34th Street.
She was only eight?
Yeah.
Whoa.
She's eight. She's so cute.
Yeah, she's so cute.
And also, she thought that the actor playing Santa was the real Santa Claus the entire shoot, and they didn't bother to explain that to her.
That must have been so strange for her to have to say to Santa's face
that you're not Santa.
Santa,
yeah.
That must have really been tough.
Yes. Well, she did it. She's a great actor.
Yeah.
Things are now going to take a disturbing turn. In 1954, at the age of about 15, she allegedly engaged in a relationship with a 38-year-old Frank Sinatra. The two had been set up by her mother, allegedly bartering Natalie's virginity to try and help her career.
Oh my God.
According to Sinatra's valet, he was nervous about the situation because it was unclear to him whether Natalie was 15 or 18. Frank!